Good evening, everybody. My name is Roger Smith, and I'm an alcoholic. And I am truly grateful to be here tonight and surprised as hell. I thought this was going to be a much smaller group. But that's okay, because once I get started, I need someone to flag me down. Because I love this program, the program that I deal with. I am a true blood member of the Alcoholics Anonymous. It is what saved my life. You know, when I volunteered, or I asked to come out here and speak, I got a letter from Chris, an email telling me that about the recovery center, and that it's a recovery center that's not based necessarily just on AA, but it is based on recovery. And they talk about not just alcohol here, they talk about drugs. And I normally don't talk about drugs when I speak, but I'd be lying to you if I told you I didn't do drugs. It just wasn't my thing of choice. I grew up in the early 60s and 70s. I was just outside of Washington, D.C. I was part of the peace movement, and I smoked a lot of pot. I did a lot of cocaine, and I did all the other drugs that went along with that era because I wanted to be part of something. And, it was okay. I've had a lot of really good times. I have a lot of great stories to tell about it. But those are real irrelevant in the fact that my problem came down to being alcohol. I could easily give up my drugs, but alcohol just would not let go. For your information, my sobriety date is October 22nd, 1988. Now, and I appreciate that, woo, because I worked for every day of that. But it's no more miracle than you guys who get up every day and you listen to and you follow the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You have the same chance every day that I have. That's a fact, Jack. I'm telling you. Nobody has anything on anybody as far as their ability to get sober if they truly want it. Now, they tell me when I came in here that I should share my experience, strength, and hope. Now, I have notes, and I spent a lot of time typing them out, and I very rarely ever use them, but I thought I ought to bring them out if I spent that much time. All right, blah, 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 I've done all that. Okay. If y'all don't mind, I'm going to say a little prayer that I like to say every day that helps me get started, and hopefully it'll help me tell you the truth. It says, "My Creator, I am willing now that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of being useful for you and my fellows, not just God, but all y'all also. Grant me the strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen." Now, I know Alcoholics Anonymous is not a religion. I know it's not anything other than a place where you can go to learn the steps in order to become a better person, which I think all of us want to be. But there are things you just have to do. Even if you believe in God and you have a God in your heart, God is not going to do this for you. He's going to give you the strength to do it. Okay? That's just the facts. I've been sober for quite a while, and God has never come down and made my life any easier other than to give me the strength to do whatever it is I felt necessary to do the things I did. All right, I'm supposed to say experience, strength, and hope. Experiences, I got lots of them. I can tell you war stories left and right. I thought I ought to throw a few drug ones in just because this is a place where y'all talk about drugs also. And how can I put this? Like I said, I grew up in the 60s. Now, I don't know if there's a few of you people in there with a little gray in your hair. Might be old enough to remember that time frame. But that was peace, love, rock on. And I believed that. And I thought that the only way to do that was to smoke as much pot as I could, get as high as I could, go out, find all the ladies that I could, and have all the good free sex that I could, and make it home at the end of the night safe. Now, honestly, that last part was never in my thoughts, but that's the way I usually ended up praying, thank you for getting me home tonight. All right, so I grew up in the 60s. I'm one of six children. I screw that up every time. I have five brothers and sisters. Alcohol is a family disease, I believe. Now, I'm not speaking for any medical association. I'm not speaking for AA when I say that. I'm just telling you, I got drug addicts and I got alcoholics in my family. And a couple of them have died from it. Where there was five brothers and sisters besides myself, now there is only two more. Now, not all of them died for alcohol-related deaths, but I do have an older brother whose death certificate says alcoholism. Doesn't say anything else. Now, I never would have thought he was an alcoholic, but apparently the doctor did. So, is there alcoholism in my family? Yeah, there is. My younger brother, who would have been 62, passed away several years ago. He partied even harder than I did. And he paid the price, you know, because when you get older, your body just reacts to how you acted when you were younger. Remember that, you really young people? Your body will end up paying the price for all the indiscretions and fun that you've had. And he ended up having diabetes. He had a bad liver. He had all this. And he is now buried in Warrenton, Virginia. He didn't make his 63rd birthday. I love my brother to death. I wish I could have helped him. As a matter of fact, my first big book that I got in 1988 is signed from him saying, "Welcome to the group, Roger. Me and your brother John are glad you're here." And I went, wow, that's pretty awesome. I've got two people in the family that are going to be working with me. And sad to say, one of them's gone, the other one's back out drinking. But that's what this disease does. It tells us we don't have a problem. It tells us it's okay. Those issues that we have are just that. They're just issues. You can overcome them. You'll wake up in the morning, clear the cobwebs away, go out, check your car, see there's no blood, see there's no extra dents, make sure your car's there. All these things, you'll be able to get up from that and you'll go, it wasn't so bad. Now, I don't know if any of y'all ever experienced any of that. I've done that bunches of times. Okay, so I've got a brother, two brothers that are in the program. I've got it's a family disease. I graduated from high school in 1972. Okay? That makes me 65 years old. I should have graduated in 1971, but I was a little slow. So they told me I had to do something again, and I, you know, to hell. I don't mind. I spent every time I went out to get drunk, or every time I went out to drink, I never went out just to have a drink. Now, you know how you are when you're 17, right? You go find somebody who's going to buy you some beer or wine or whatever you can get. And I don't know about you, but we'd get all our money together, and then we'd stand outside of the 7-Eleven, and we'd wait till we see an old wino or somebody walk up, and we'd say, "Hey, you buy us some beer?" He'd say, "Sure. What are you going to give me?" You know, and we'd offer him a bottle of wine, and he'd go in, and we'd say, "Just buy as much as you can with this money. We don't care how much it is. Just get as much as you can." And we would drink it. Now, how many of y'all, when you got a bottle of wine, took the top off and threw the top away? There's a purpose for that, right? You're not going to need it anymore. It's just going to get in the way. And that's how I drank from the very beginning. I truly did. There was never any, I just want to have a glass of wine or a beer or a shot of whiskey. It was never anything like that. I wanted to see how much it took before I became stupidly drunk. And it usually didn't take a lot in the beginning. And I can remember just heaving in the bushes, hanging over the toilet, praying to the porcelain god that he'll let me get by this day again so I can do it again this next weekend. And that's just the way it was. That's how life was for me when I was young. All right. I went out in 19... I'm going to skip a little bit because from 70 to 78, I was just running on pure adrenaline. I was out there, I was smoking, joking, and having the best time I could have, doing anything I could do to avoid being responsible because I didn't want to be responsible. That meant I had to stop. I had to cut my hair. Long way from there. I had to cut my hair. I had to go out and get a job, and I had to become one of those people that worked from 9 to 5, and I did not want that. That's not the lifestyle I looked for. I wanted to party every day. So from 1972 to 1978, I did the best I could. I couch surfed. I lived on people's couches. I begged, borrowed, steal, do whatever I could to find somewhere to live in order to perpetuate my good times. And I will tell you, I thought I had good times those whole years. I got arrested one time, and you'd have to know a little bit about my family history. I look just like my older brother. He's just older. And right now he has a lot more hair than me, and he still lets me know that. But I was sitting in front of the 7-Eleven about 11 o'clock at night, and my friend had gone in to get some beer, and I was sitting in the back seat. And next thing I know, I look in the window, and I've got a police officer in this window and a police officer in this window, and they both got guns pointed at me, telling me to stop what I was doing, raise my hand. Now, of course, I'm going, what are they there for? Why are they bothering me? Well, this was in 1974, and they were a little more lenient back then. The police officers were nice enough. They looked in the window, and they said, Johnny? I said, no, my name's Roger. And he says, oh, hell, you're not Roger, you're Johnny, right? And I went, no, you're talking about my older brother. They thought they had caught my older brother. My older brother was a heroin addict. He was a gangster, a true gangster. We used to have shootouts in front of my house. You know, the guys drive by with the guns and shoot the windows out. And so they thought I was him, and that's why they pulled me in that night. Well, they searched the car, and they didn't find anything other than a small baggie of marijuana. And at the time, they didn't take you to jail for that. He said, well, Mr. Smith, what we're going to do here is I'm going to issue a citation, and you need to come to court on this date and explain why you had this bag of marijuana. Okay, so he gave me a ticket and let me go. He took my pot, bummed my night out. So for like a month, I was worried to death. My parents had already given up on me. They weren't going to help me with anything. I went in and said, I need a lawyer. I've got to go to court for pot. My mom said, sorry about that, because she'd already been through my brother, you see, and she wasn't going to put up with it with me. So I did this whole month of worrying to death. I had to go to court. So I was going to court, and I was going to represent myself. You've heard that saying, right? Only a fool represents himself. God was watching out for me that day. I went to court, and I stood in front of the judge, and the judge said, Mr. Smith, how did he put it? I'm trying to think the exact words. Basically, are you guilty of this? And I said, no, Your Honor. He said, where's the police officer who busted you? Because they had to be in court with you. They looked around, and that police officer wasn't there. Judge says, he went to the prosecuting attorney, says, where's the police officer? Well, I don't know, Your Honor. Judge says, case dismissed. God was watching out for me when I couldn't watch out for myself. So I'm going to tell you right then, I had a little bit of a scare there. I decided doing drugs probably wasn't the answer for me. I know that doesn't sound like a big, hairy scare, but it doesn't take a lot for me to get smart. So I'd love to tell you I didn't quit doing drugs. I just slowed down doing drugs, and I heated up on my alcohol use. Well, 1978, I did something that at the time I thought was a desperate act of life. I joined the U.S. Army. Hoo-ah. Got any veterans in here? No? That's okay. There you are. I joined the Army. Now, I joined the Army so that I could get away from the lifestyle I was living at the moment. I didn't have anything. I was sleeping on couches. I didn't know what to do. And I'd grown up in a military family, so I know that the military take care of you. So I was going to let them take care of me for a while. Well, you know, like all good things, I went into this and I did my best because I'm an ass kisser. I wanted to be able to get by. I wanted to be able to be treated nicely. So I did everything that they asked me to do. And I rose up through the ranks really fast. I did good. And they sent me to places where you just love to go. I went to Anniston, Alabama. Spent 6 years there. Hoo-ah. Yeah, let me tell you, inbred, stuff like that happens there. And then they sent me to Europe. Now, I was actually born in Wurzburg, Germany in 1953. Like I said, I'm an army brat. So I've been to Germany. And I'm a cocky sucker. So when I got to Germany, I learned about 10 phrases. And one of them is, Ich bin ein Deutscher, ich geboren in Deutschland. Which means I was born in Germany and, you know, that. And the Germans love that shit. So they bought all the rounds. We got an Americano and he speaks German. And I didn't speak any German. I spoke that. And it was enough to get me drunk. And I have to tell you, I enjoy German beer. It's a higher alcohol content than the beer we drink here. And it's usually like 6.4. And they just had so many varieties. It's an alcoholic, you know, smorgasbord. So I went about life and had the greatest time in the world. I traveled all over Europe. I went to Paris. I went to Amsterdam. Went up and bought hashish in Amsterdam. I went to Luxembourg. I drove over to England. I did all this great stuff. But in the process, my drinking progressed because I was lonely. Now, you can get out in the middle of Germany with nobody around you and look around and think you're in right here in Austin, Texas, in some spots. Looks just like it until you read a sign. And then the sign says something that you have to get a translator to tell you what it said. So it felt like home, looked like home, but it wasn't home. And I spent a lot of time by myself. Now, it didn't start out that way. I used to go to the Gasthauses and I'd sit. And I got to share a story about this. I went in this one Gasthaus that I used to frequent all the time. And I was sitting down at this wooden table, big wooden table, with a whole bunch of that night's friends, you know? And I'm sitting on a wooden log. I'm inside the table so that the only way to get out is to go around people. And we're doing shots of Metexa or something like that, some kind of alcohol that you had to, no, Sambuca. You had to light it on fire. So you would get the Sambuca, you would light it on fire, you would blow the fire out. It had a coffee bean inside of it. You would shoot the coffee bean down, chew it up. And you'd do this as long as you could. Well, you can imagine after about 4 or 5 of those, my motor control got bad. And I'm sitting there, and they were doing shots, and everybody's just having the greatest time. These Germans can drink like you just would not believe. And we're doing these shots, and it's Roger's turn. So Roger gets his Zambuca, and we set it on fire. I take it. I go, it's over here. And I threw it at my face, and then my face caught on fire. So I'm doing this. I'm slapping my face, and I throw it down on the ground, and then the table catches on fire. And I'm slapping the table, and the flames are flying. And people are just getting freaked out around me. They're jumping up trying to get away, and I can't get out. I'm sitting on this leg. Well, that's the kind of nights I had in Germany. And I want to tell you, that same night, you think to add insult to injury, I got caught on fire. It wasn't real bad. I didn't burn myself too bad because it's superficial. It's alcohol. Burns pretty quickly, but it scared the hell out of me. So I got up. The proprietor, his name was Peter. Peter said, Roger, you need to leave. We can't have our Gasthaus burnt down. I said, okay. Now, I lived on a caserne, which is an army billets, and I had to walk through the Black Forest to get back to my caserne. Now, I'm three sheets in the wind. I'm drunk. I just had this terrible experience. I just want to get home because I got to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go run around the Black Forest and, you know, I had to go do all that crap. And on my way there, somewhere along the line, somebody hit me in the back of the head and stole my wallet. Left me laying in the Black Forest. I'd been mugged, taken all my money, took all my ID, and left me, as far as they were concerned, for dead. Well, I woke up and, you know, I don't know about you, but I woke up and I looked around and went, where the hell am I at? It is super dark. I'm in the middle of the forest. I can't remember what happened because I got a burning ass headache from the whack on the back of my head and all that Sambuca I drank. Well, I came in late for, and you know what? Army's not real forgiving. They don't go, oh, you're late, just go to work. You got to go tell somebody what you did. And so I had to go, you know, open up to my boss, my first sergeant, tell him, listen, I got mugged. You know, I just woke up in the forest. And he goes, Roger, how the hell did you get mugged? You know, you're one of America's finest. you should not be getting mugged. I said, I was one of America's finest, three sheets in the wind. They, you know, a little kid could have knocked me on the head and took all my money. Well, that's just one of the many stories I had. Well, I can tell you, back in 1984 or so, I had gone down to, I was in Stuttgart, Germany. I'd gone down to Stuttgart to go to McDonald's because I missed America. In McDonald's in Germany, you can get a Vitafunder mit Käse and a beer, which is a quarter pounder with beer and a beer. And I ate American hamburgers and drank beer at McDonald's. I was back in America. It was great. Except you can't drink beer in America at McDonald's. That's the great thing about Germany. Well, I don't know how long I sat there, but I got ready to go back to where I was living, and I got in my car, and I didn't start it, but I got stopped by a Polizei. That's a German policeman. He goes, where do you think you're going? I said, I'm going home. He says, you're too drunk to go home. I said, no, I'm not. I'm not too drunk. I'm okay. He says, get out. And, you know, they already are fit up with Americans anyway because we're the ugly Americans, the drunk ones. We're not the ones that they all love to see. You remember the Gontag Club going, oh, hail Deutschland. We're the ones that, you know, are puking on it, taking their women, getting them pregnant, doing things that are just not the best representative of American life. And he told me that he was going to arrest me for drunken public. And I went, that's crap. Why would you want to do that? I haven't done anything. I haven't drove anywhere. He said, I'm tired of you people acting like you are. I said, I automatically went, call my first sergeant. You know, I want to go back to the Americans because I've seen the movies about getting put in jail in foreign countries. I don't want to go to jail in a foreign country. So they did. They were nice enough to do that. And the Army took me back and they slapped my hand. And they told me that they said, do you think you have a problem with alcohol? I went, no. I said, I'm just extremely unlucky. And they looked at me and went, really? How much did you have to drink last night? I said, 3 or 4. And the woman that was talking to me, she was in the Army, it's called a DAPSE. It's an alcohol and drug program. And they were interviewing me to see what they were going to do for me. And I guess I have that kind of face. She goes, yeah, well, maybe you were unlucky. And then she brought out her little list of 10 questions. I don't know if you all get to ask them 10 questions ever about how much you drink, where do you drink, what days do you drink on. And I lied on every one of them. Now, in my head, I knew how many of them I got wrong. They didn't know, or at least I didn't think they knew. And at the end, the lady says, well, I don't think you have a problem with alcohol. I think you were unlucky. And I just said, you're the sweetest thing in the world. Thank you so much. You're right. And I got in trouble. I mean, you can't do things like this, you know, be home, be brought to your company by the German Polizei and not get in some trouble. So they took me back and they gave me a big $500 fine and they restricted me to the base, which was probably the worst punishment they could do. Because if you're stuck inside a fence in a foreign country and you can't go anywhere, it sucks. Because all you get to do is army stuff. I painted trees. I painted rocks. I did all this stuff because that was my punishment. And I thought, oh, well, no problem. I had to go in front of the battalion commander. And I know it's not important y'all know ranks or anything like that. But I was a staff sergeant. I had to go in front of the company, the battalion commander. And I already knew what was going to happen because they briefed me before I went in there. And I went in and stood in front of them. And I said, Sergeant Smith reporting. And he said, yes, Sergeant Smith, we have a problem here. We see that you were arrested for this, this, and this. What are we going to do about this? I said, well, sir, I'm not going to do that again. I said, I've already talked to the DAPSE people, and we've worked out a plan. And he goes, okay, good. Well, what I'm going to do, Sergeant Smith, is I'm going to reduce you to the rank of E4. Now, I was an E6, and I looked at him, and my jaw dropped down to about here. And I looked over at my help. I had an officer that was my help. And I looked at him, and I went, and I walked out thinking I'd been busted down to E4. Now, like I say, not a big deal to you people who don't know the military rank structure, but I just went from being a major player to go get the broom and sweep the floors kind of guy. So I walked out, my head between my legs, and they had a big conference afterward, and they came back and said, oh, the colonel was wrong. He's giving you a temporary reduction to E5, and if you stay out of trouble for a year, we'll make you an E6 again. I went, oh, thank you, so God. Thank you, God. God gets me out of everything. All right, so I went about my business. I got out of trouble. I did everything that I was supposed to do. Once again, because I'm a super soldier, I'm a pleaser. I'm a pleaser of people. And I went out and I did things, and I did great things. I got copious awards. Ooh, I got all kinds of medals on my chest and stuff. And I got promoted again, amazingly. And I made Sergeant First Class. Now, once again, it doesn't matter what the rank is. Just let you know that it's pretty high up there. And they had trust in me, and I was a leader of men. I had people that worked for me. And I'm going to have to get down to what my last drunk was, because as a leader of men, my last drunk happened on October 22nd of 1988. You know, I make jokes about a lot of the things I do because they're funny now. And I know you all have done dumb things that made your life kind of miserable for a minute, and then you joke about it later. But in reality, you know, you sit there and go, how could I let that happen to me? How could I let that happen to me? Well, I'm in Germany for my second time. I'd gone back to Alabama because, I don't know, the Army hated me. And they sent me back to Alabama for 3 more years. Sent me back to Germany, and I'm in Germany, and I'm assigned to a medical unit. I worked in a hospital. I had a great job. I could play golf 3 days a week during duty. I would get with the anesthesiologist, and we'd go play golf. Well, on one, I don't remember what day of the week it was, they said, let's go play golf. Sergeant Smith, you want it? You in? I went, I'm in. I'll meet you there at 7 o'clock. 7 o'clock in the morning, I'm at the tee. I've got my golf clubs, and I've got my cooler, and I take my first beer. And I drink my first beer at the first tee box. Hit the ball. Ball's looking good. By the time I get through 18 holes, I don't know how much I drank, but we decided to play 9 more. And so I'm playing. That takes 4 hours to play golf, for those of y'all who never played golf. Usually takes 4 hours. We were out there for 6.5 hours, and I was steadily drinking the whole time. Well, I'm a young man. I'm a United States Army soldier, and I'm horny. I got drunk, and I was horny. So I said, I'm going to go down to Nuremberg. I'm now stationed in Nuremberg, Germany. And so I'm going to go down to the clubs, because that's where the ladies are at. And I want to go meet a lady. And there's some jokes involved in that, too. I got to be honest. So I go out, and I don't know what prompted me, but at that time I was driving a Ford van, a family van type car. I don't know who talked me into buying it, but I bought it. And if you've ever been in Europe, you know they have these things called autobahns where you can drive as fast as you want. As a matter of fact, if you're driving along and looking in your rearview mirror and somebody's blinking their lights at you, it means get the hell out of the way. You're not going fast enough. So I'm driving down the autobahn, been drinking all day long, and I look up, and this is key, I look up, and everybody in front of me is stopped. I don't know how fast I was going, but I knew in my heart there was no way I was going to stop before I came in contact with those cars. And I didn't. And I plowed into the back of numerous cars, and I don't remember a whole lot of that night, except sitting on the side of the road on a guardrail, and I've got my hands cuffed behind my back, and there is a German Polizei who is extremely mad at me. Now, I told you I spoke a little German. Now, when you learn a little bit of a foreign language, what's the first words you learn? Cuss words. He wasn't talking nice things about me. He was calling me everything in the world because I was the ugly American at the moment. And as I look up to look around, I see ambulances. And I see people being carted away in ambulances. And I want to tell you, my heart fell into my shoes. You know, because in all the drinking I ever did, I never wanted to hurt anybody. That was never my intention. You know, I just wanted to have some fun. I wanted to go out there and drink and just have the best time I could have. Well, that night, it no longer was fun. And it got ugly. I don't know how many people went to the hospital that night. I do know, and I only learned about this later, nobody died, thank God. But I ruined a lot of lives that night. Least of all, mine. You know, I didn't know what to do. You know, when they talk about coming to a point in your life where you're an incomprehensible demoralization and your life is turned to shit and you don't know what to do, I didn't have any solutions. Now, earlier in my story, I didn't tell you about the fact that I'd gone to one AA meeting in my life before I'd gone to Germany, and it was because my brother invited it to me, and I went in there, and they were sitting around a big circle, and they were sharing. And when they got around to me, they said, I looked at them all, and they had all said, "Hi, I'm so-and-so, I'm an alcoholic," or "I'm so-and-so, I'm a drug addict." And when it got to me, I said, "Hi, I'm Roger, and I'm Johnny's brother, and I sure am glad you fixed him, because he was an ass." You know, he was the heroin addict, alcoholic. He had, his life sucked. And that was the first meeting I ever had with Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was thinking about that night because I'm looking for ways out. I'm like any alcoholic. First thing we do is, how can I get out of this? I know I'm in deep shit. This is not one I'm going to be able to just say, "Oh, I had a couple beers." This is not going to work. Am I running out of time? Okay. I didn't know what to do, so I gave up. And that night was the beginning of the best part of my life. Now, I know that's hard to say now. Actually, it's easy to say now. It was hard to believe then. Well, what happened is I just got in a shitload of trouble. I got court-martialed, and I know y'all don't have to know what that means. It just means I went to court, and they weren't real kind to me. They didn't kick me out of the Army because at the time I had 16 years in the Army and I was hoping to get to retirement. But they didn't kick me out. They said, "What you need to do is you need to go to treatment." And I went, "Okay." You know, I'm not going to argue at this point. I know I'm lost. And I said, "Okay, what does that mean?" Well, they were going to send me to a place called Fifth General Hospital in Stuttgart, Germany. And I was going to go in there and I was going to stay there. It was a 30-day program. And I was going to listen to and do everything they asked me to do. And I said, "Okay." Now, I'm still a little cocky. I still got a little bit of that, you know, self-centeredness in me that says, I asked him, I said, is this a self-paced course? Because I've done really well up to this point. I could probably do that 30 days in 2 weeks, I'm sure. You know, I'll give up, give in, and become part of. And in 2 weeks, I'll be a card-carrying member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm sure. And they laughed and said, no, you're going to have to stay the whole 30 days. And I'll tell you, I went in there, and treatment was interesting. I found out I have an actual classification by a psychiatrist. It's called, I'm an episodic alcoholic, which in simple words means I like to get drunk on the weekends. Okay, I'm good with that. But I also discovered a lot of things about alcoholism that I didn't know. I thought an alcoholic lived under the bridge, drank out of brown paper bags. I thought they was somebody else. Couldn't have been me. Can't be me. How could I be an alcoholic? I'm successful. And I'm getting ready to go to treatment. I'm successful. You know, I am the, you know, I'm the man. And I tell you, when I was getting ready to go, they said you should go to AA meetings. Now, I had heard of AA meetings. I didn't know what they were like. I didn't know what to expect. I remember walking in to my first AA meeting. I walked into the front of the building where it was going to be, and there's a bunch of people standing outside, just like when I came here. And they were all standing around talking. They were smoking cigarettes, and they were talking. And then somebody said, hey, it's time for the meeting to start. And they went, and they found out nobody had a key to the door. I said, these people don't know shit. Can't even get in the building where they're going to have their meeting. This is not going to work. I can tell right now. Maybe I should help them. Well, they ended up moving to another place. And the one thing I can tell you about my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting is I went in there and I instantaneously felt welcome. Now, I don't mean they went on there and patted me on the back. They didn't do any of that stuff. They just sat there and they just accepted the fact I was there because I had a problem that they knew more about than I did. And they were willing to just say they were glad I was there. And a lot of them said it in languages I didn't understand. Because 3/4 of the people in this meeting were German or English, now, or Irish or Scottish. Now, you ever talk to a real Scottish person? I can look him in the eye and, I don't know what you're saying. He can just, but, but. Well, my point being is, there was a lot of people there that were of different nationalities, but we all had one thing in common. We were alcoholics, and we were looking for a solution. And that night was the beginning of a journey I'll never forget. That night, I remember going, okay, I can do this. I can do this. Now, if any of y'all have any reservations on whether or not you're able to do Alcoholics Anonymous and get sober, get clean, if you truly want to get sober, you can do it. Alcoholics Anonymous works 100% of the time for 100% of the people if you work it 100% of the time. I know that. I've been sitting around here at going to these meetings for the past 29 years, and it's been proved to me every time I go. Now, you can't, it's not, nothing's given to you. I had to do the steps. And I'll tell you, I looked at the steps just like I did the whole program. I said, you know, it's like Monty Hall. Well, what do I do for this? I can do this in 12 steps, or I can do this in 4, or I can do one first step, 12 step, I'm good to go. I was blessed enough to meet a person there that I liked. I thought when he spoke, he shared stuff that just really touched my heart. It touched where I was at and the kind of person. Now, his name was Manny. Manny was just about this tall. He rode a Harley Davidson. He had black leather jacket on, black leathers, because he's always on his bike. And he was, where was he from? I think he was from Puerto Rico. And Manny talked like this. He says, if you want to get sober, just stay with me. you lead, I'll follow, Manny. And Manny took me through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, there's a lot of stuff you're going to learn about Alcoholics Anonymous if that's the road you choose. First step is the most important step. Once you commit yourself to that first step and then you start working your way through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, amazing things will happen to you. I guarantee it. You can't help it. The things that I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm going to tell you, I'm a self-centered, egotistical, it's me, me, me. And you know, like I said, I've been sober 29 years, and I just learned about 6 months ago, it's still me, me, me. And I bring that up because I want you all to know that it doesn't matter how long you've been sober, you have to work this program every day. You get up in the morning. I get up in the morning and I have things I do. I read certain things. I ask my higher power, and I call him God. You call him whatever you want. I ask him, what do you want me to do today, God? How can I best serve you? And then I sit and I think about it. And then I'm retired. Hell, I can do anything I want now. I don't have to do anything. I got up at 8 o'clock this morning. But I asked God, what should I do today to better serve him? And, you know, I've done that for years and years and years. And about 6 months ago, I had a revelation. I had a revelation after 29 years. And my revelation was, you just can't sit on your laurels and expect AA to do your job for you. Because I'd been doing AA so long that I thought it just worked in me. I didn't have to do anything. AA just worked in me. I knew when it was the right thing to do. I knew when I needed to say I'm sorry and I owe you an apology for whatever it is I do. I knew all this stuff. But the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous for me is that it allows me to have a better day every day. And I wasn't having that. I wasn't having it. And it all came to me one day. I was at a meeting, one of my Friday night meetings, and I'm standing there, and this lovely woman walked up to me and said, Roger, we're looking for speakers for the Friday night speaker meeting. And I looked at her and went, oh, I can't do that. I'm too busy. And as soon as the words came out of my mouth, I know I'd screwed up. Because what you learn in Alcoholics Anonymous, you're never too busy for somebody else. Because that's how I stay sober. And she left. And that poor woman, she's got 8 years in sobriety. I'm not responsible for her sobriety. But I could tell she's pretty disappointed. Because she fully expected me to go, oh, hell yes. What day do you want me to be there? When do you want me to stay? You know, what do you want me to say? Whatever. And I didn't. I turned her down. And that bothered me. Now, you might think after 29 years, life's going pretty well. I'm going to tell you now, I retired from the military, full retirement. I went to school, got an education as a educator. I'm a special education teacher in elementary school. I retired from that. So I'm a retired person. I have got time on my hands. And to say I'm too busy is bullshit. And that made me start thinking. Now, I also have to be honest about something else. And if you hadn't heard this yet in what I've shared with you so far, you can't do this alone. Because none of us are that good. None of us. I met a guy that had 54 years sobriety. He has a sponsor. Yeah. You need help. Because if I start believing the things I think, that's where all my trouble starts. So after 29 years, and I have to keep saying that out loud, after 29 years, I had to go to someone and say, hey, I need a sponsor. Will you be my sponsor? Now, I want to tell you, with someone with 29 years, it's hard to find anybody's longer sobriety. And it didn't matter to me. My sponsor doesn't have as much time as I got. But man, is he smart. He is smart. He has helped me immensely. What I'm trying to say by all this is you can never know too much about this program. You can never think you've done enough. If you think that you've done enough for your sobriety, you're cheating yourselves. Because you deserve more. Every one of y'all deserve the best life you can get. And if you don't reach out and do something about it yourself, then if you're not successful at it, it's your fault. And I want to tell you, my sponsor, I don't want to say he's humbled me, but he's made me do things lately that I just don't feel comfortable about. He called me the other day and said, "Roger, I went out and I wrote your name in some bathroom stalls at the recovery center." Call Roger if you need a sponsor. And I want you to know, that freaked the shit out of me. Now, he didn't actually write my name on the stalls, but he went to some of the psychiatrists at the different centers and told them that if you want someone to sponsor some of your people in treatment, tell them to ask for Roger. He wants to help. And damn, I got a call the other day. And it's amazing because the hand of one AA reaching out for the hand of another AA to help is what got me sober, and I want to be there when I help someone else get sober. You all have every chance in the world of being sober. You know, I was talking to some people before the meeting started, and I listened. I like to listen to people share when they're talking, and I see people walking up and say, "Hey, brother, I haven't seen you in a while. How you doing? Okay." And do you really believe okay is good enough? Is okay good enough for you? You all got to have hopes and dreams, or else you wouldn't be in treatment center. You got to want a better thing than what you had, right? If you don't want anything better, keep doing the shit you did. Who knows? Maybe your luck will change. It never did for me. I know that if I want to keep what I got to give it away to other people. I have to share my experience, strength, and hope. I have to go out and I have to help other alcoholics who don't understand the program. You know, I've been in enough meetings where I sat there and I watched newcomers come in and they walk into the meeting and they're not necessarily scared, but they don't know what to expect. And we in AA, who've been here for a while, tend to talk in languages people don't understand. You know, "Oh, get your big book and we're going to turn to chapter 12 and we're going to talk about this and we're going to do this." And people look at you and I feel so bad for them. And so you got to work with them people. You got to talk to them, say, "Stick around. You'll start understanding what we say after a while. You'll start to get it." And if you truly believe that you're worth a better life, then you'll work for it, won't you? I see children in here, you know. If you have children, you got to do that. I have two kids. They're not kids anymore. I have a son who's 24 and a son who's 22. My 24-year-old, apparently he's the golden boy. He's going to be a doctor someday. I got a 22-year-old. He may end up in here. He should be in here. But, you know, he's 22. I can't convince him of shit. Doesn't matter that I got 29 years sobriety. When I talk to him about being sober and clean, he looks at me, "Oh, man, you don't know shit." I go, "Okay, well, when you get arrested, don't call me to bail you out. Because I love you way too much to bail you out of jail. Because we got to pay for whatever we do." Okay, I want to leave you just with the fact that you know that it has been an honor for me to be here today. To see your faces and see you people. And to have you sit here and listen to someone who... I get excited about this program. You know, we say we're a program of not promotion, but attraction. Well, I'm afraid I try to promote. But you can't help it if you love something. And I love this, and I want to take a chance to a time in a minute to invite each and every one of y'all to Buda to our meetings. We have meetings Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. On Tuesday afternoon at 12, on Thursday afternoon at 12, and on Saturday afternoon at 12. See, we've taken away every excuse you got for not wanting to come to one of our meetings. Please come down to Buda and join me and sit around, and you'll get to meet other people that I think are just a fantastic bunch of people who would love to see each and every one of you all there. Thank you very much. Thank you.